Hello, and welcome to Change Starts Here, a research conversation episode. So I am here with my colleagues, Jennifer Chevalier and Eve Miller. And so I'm just going to ask for like 30 seconds of patience before the big reveal about what today's topic is going to be. So Jen and Eve, a couple of questions for you. I am going to name for you some tasks that oftentimes show up in people's job, and all you have to do is give a verbal yes or no about whether it shows up for you in your job. Okay. So first one, working together with other people.
Yes.
So when you say it shows up in our job, like, should it show up in our job, but we choose not? I'm being difficult. Yes, it does. Yes.
Okay. All right. Managing projects.
Yes.
When you say yes.
Okay. All right. Creating written communications.
Definitely.
Yes.
Okay. Working to improve processes.
Yes.
Yes. Ideally.
All right. Now get ready for this next one. All right.
Gosh, we're doing so good.
Responding to a crisis or urgent request.
That's when I call in sick. No, yeah. Just kidding. Yes, of course, yes.
Crises do not occur at Franklin Covey. We are all living in Q2.
We're very proactive.
In other situations I've been in, yes, I'm familiar with this. Yes.
Okay. So do either of you see a common denominator to each of these tasks? Like, what do they all have in common?
I feel like they're applicable to every job mm-hmm. and like every person's mm-hmm. school experience. Like, they're just mm-hmm. things that you don't necessarily plan in, but they're just a natural way of being. What about you, mm-hmm. Eve?
Yeah, I was thinking, and maybe I have a bias because of the episodes this year we've been taking on executive functions. And so what came to me was, well, they all require executive functioning, but that's kind of cheating because, you know, most things require executive functions. So yeah. Is there something else besides those things?
So, well, the one executive function that kind of speaks to me as the common denominator is problem solving. See, in order to do each one of those tasks, working together with others, managing projects, creating written communications, working to improve processes, and responding to an urgent request or crisis, all of those things involve problem solving, which is, for those who are waiting so patiently, the topic of today's conversation.
So what I heard is that Eve got that answer right and I didn't. So, okay, cool. I'll try and redeem myself. It's good.
Oh, thank you for pointing that out, Jennifer. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. 50 extra points to me. Yes.
No, actually, what you did, Jen, was describe problem solving. And then Eve put it under the umbrella of executive function. So I consider both of you right. All right. So can you think of other things that you do in your day-to-day work life that involve problem solving?
No, everything that comes to my mind is either the things you said or like actual problem solving, right? So what comes to my mind as far as problem solving, I think in the research role, I'm often, I call myself like a problem finder and solver, right? Because I like to find things going on in education that need fixing or like, you know, oh, this is kind of an issue. So I think there's kind of that piece that I think about a lot as far as problem solving. And then the research part of it is, how do we bring in best practice? What is research saying that helps us solve it? So I think that's kind of a critical part of the job.
I find in my role, I'm constantly collaborating with other people internally or our clients externally. And sometimes communication isn't clear. And so it can cause like little glitches. And then, you know, is constantly trying to make sure everyone's seeing things the same way and we have a common understanding so that the work can move quickly and work well. So just like the nuances of interacting with others just brings up, I don't know if they're problems, but like challenges, right, that have to be considered and overcome.
So, you know, I love hearing from both of you about the different types of problems that you have to solve. Because I think between the things that I mentioned and the things that you're mentioning, it kind of goes without saying that having strong problem-solving skills is really important in the workplace. In fact, they recently did a survey of employers, and 85.5% of them said that problem solving is one of the most important skills that they are looking for in new graduates, so that they're newly hiring. And so this matters to employers. So by default, it matters to educators, right? This question bubbles to the surface. Okay, this matters to employers. So how are we going to develop this in students? So as I was thinking about preparing for this podcast episode, I was going back in my mind to some of the students that I have encountered. And I have a very vivid memory of working with a third grader who had just picked a new book. I pulled up alongside of her and I asked her, because it was a brand new book, just to read a little bit out loud to me because there was nothing to talk about. She hadn't read any of it yet. So let's just read together. And she was very compliant and said, sure. And she begins reading out loud. And as she was reading, she came to a word that she didn't know. And she looks at it ever so briefly and sticks her finger in the air, just like this. Okay. And then she continues on and she comes to another word she doesn't know and sticks a second finger in the air. And she does this three more times until she's got five fingers up in the air and slams the book shut, very abrupt. And says, I can't read this book, it's too hard. And I'm bringing this up in the context of problem solving, wanting to ask you, when I tell you that story, what do you hear? What does it bring to mind under the umbrella of problem solving?
The first thing that comes to my mind is somebody obviously taught her this strategy. Like, that's not a normal behavior that someone would just randomly do. And so I think about, it almost set the student up to avoid difficult texts by getting to that five and being able to say, I can't do this one. I'm going to go get an easy one, instead of using the strategies like context clues and pictures and different things to gain the meaning and to, you know, be able to fill in the blank with maybe a word that would make sense, even if she didn't know that exact word. So I'm a little troubled by whatever was taught to her.
I'll add on to that. What, as Jennifer was saying that, I started thinking, yeah, the way that we define problem, we need to consider how we define a problem, because someone defined her, when you reach five, that's a problem. And this is the solution, in a sense. Like, so what is the pair and what is the problem? What's the solution for problem solving? And if we identify the wrong problem, or we call it a problem when it's not a problem, right? The solution is not going to fit, or it might not serve us in a way that actually leads to learning in this situation, or maybe it just needs a reframe so often. So,
yeah, I think that the way that you said that, Eve, like something that is serving you, and Jennifer, you alluded to it also, is that this solution that she has to this problem that she's identifying is definitely not working for her. And I was thinking that that is an example of a child who needs problem-solving skills, right? The strategies that this child has are not working for her. And so in my mind, it's almost like the model of, so what do we do differently? What would work for her so that we kind of send her on a different trajectory where she is being more agentive in the face of difficulty? Because in that example, I mean, she encountered a difficulty, breezed on by it, you know, kept breezing by, and then you know,
gave up.
And gave up. Exactly. Exactly. We don't know. I mean, she tried nothing. She did nothing when she encountered those difficult words. And so she has no way of knowing if that book is hard for her or not, because she didn't try anything. And so, you know, as I was kind of like poking around the research around this, one of the researchers who I have come to rely on in my career is the educational neuroscientist David Sousa. And so his, you know, like there's a mantra that I read from him that kind of sits in my head as kind of the cornerstone when it comes to problem solving. The brain that does the work is the brain that does the learning. And so, I mean, it's about like living in that space where your efforts are productive and you are struggling, but not to the place where you are breaking, crying, right? You know, if we were going to, I guess, wire this child differently, do you have any thoughts about how we could encourage her to use her brain so that she is doing some more of the work, and, you know, kind of strengthening those problem solving skills?
As you're talking through that, I was just thinking about, you know, it's a cute example, you know, just holding up her five fingers and she's like, donezo. but I think about, you know, relating it to myself, or, you know, like hearing struggles that people have in, you know, developing new skills or problem solving. And I think, is that sure? That's a very explicit example, but don't we all do it in some ways? Like, oh, I missed 2 days in a row where I was going to drink all my water this many out. I'm just going to give up on that goal. Or, you know, this problem, oh, I need to reach out to that person again. I'm going to be so embarrassed. You know, like there are these components of emotion and the managing of our emotions that I hear in all of these. And I think that she reached a point, or we might reach a point, of disappointment, shame, frustration, where we go, just like identifying that it is the emotion and managing that so that we can persevere through to the end of the issue. I think that that is a component of problem solving that I don't know that she had an emotional response there, but I think as I started to apply it to adults more, I think that's something that I think can come up and get in the way of problem solving.
What came to mind for me is I would need to know a little bit more about the student. Like, does she have strategies tucked away that if I gave some prompts and asked her some questions, she could move forward? Or has she just learned to just give up and not try? And then I would need to model some strategies mm-hmm. for how to figure out what these words were, or even if it wasn't the specific word, what the meaning of the sentence or the page might be. So it would really depend on the student.
Gosh, you both saying those two things has me really thinking about how important a safe learning environment is, right? So, you know, when you bring up the emotional component, like, is, you know, we can sit here from this standpoint and say, what was going on there? And could it have been emotional? Like, she fears, like, if she makes a mistake, what am I going to say, right? You know, how might I respond? Maybe part of her prior experience has been that people have been hard on her, you know, and it's safer just to skip it and not make a mistake and say, oh, well, too hard. Dunzos, as you said, Eve.
It's how me and the kids talk these days.
Yeah. So having that safety, it makes me think about how we create that either in our workplace or in our classrooms. And I think a lot of it comes down to how we speak to one another, right? Are we using language that suggests that you should know the answer? Or are we using language that suggests, hey, let's figure this out? So, you know, it's kind of like that fixed mindset versus growth mindset research. You know, like if I say, oh, you got that right, you're so smart, that is a fixed mindset term. You know, we believe that we're only born with this much intelligence. Whereas if I said, oh, wow, you worked really hard to figure that out, you know, I can always do that no matter how much intelligence I have. So that's one of the things. And it feels safer, right? Like if you say, wow, you worked really hard at that, it feels a little safer. You know, my intelligence won't be at risk.
Even the term problem solving to me is like, there's a negative connotation around the word problem. And if we can message that differently as like an opportunity to explore creative solutions, or phrasing it in different ways can just bring about that different feel to when there's a challenge.
And you bring in a growth mindset. I think about the mechanisms, like what that does to have a fixed or growth mindset. And I think some of the related research also on problem solving, we know something that underlies problem solving is like cognitive flexibility. And what are we telling each other? So to that social aspect of it, when we criticize, when we say you didn't figure it out, or like, you know, like we expect it to be the first solution that gets them to it, or they've failed, you know, what we model for each other and for students is, you know, like a lack of flexibility, like, and also safety, all of these other pieces. But I agree. I think it is the way that we talk about problems, but also the way we, and the way we talk about solutions, and, you know, reframing it as something that is, you know, it can be a journey for some of these more complex problems. And it can be something that we need to shift and think differently. Just like with the girl in your example, she needed to shift the way that she thought about the problem, but also have some flexibility in how she allowed herself more difficult words, and, you know, that allowed her to build her ability to read.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I love holding this vision of classrooms as places of exploration, and, you know, where making mistakes is expected and okay. I cannot remember the name of the teacher who I watched on YouTube, and I need to attribute this to her. And we'll put it in the show notes if I can find her. But she was a middle school math teacher who did an exercise called with her students, where she would give them a math problem to solve, and then she would collect them all and then sort them out and, you know, right and wrong. And she would always do a fun activity with them saying, this was my favorite no, you know, this was the wrong one, and this is my favorite wrong one, and I'm going to show you why. And she used it as an example of how to show kids the common mistakes that they make when they're doing algebra. And, you know, it was just so expected in that math classroom that they were going to make mistakes. And I just think that that is a really powerful way of, you know, helping kids to lean into the work of problem solving and, you know, getting to back to that place where they actually do the work so that they really do the learning.
I think it also reminds me of when I asked Jennifer if she'll, you know, do some of my work for me on a project. She also likes to remark that her favorite no is the one she gave me that day. So I don't think that's similar, but it reminded me of it. So awesome. Yeah, I do think that is a really fun example though.
So I was thinking about it from like the building leader's perspective and growing problem solving even in their staff. And I think, you know, one of the best ways is just that culture of collaboration, right? Our professional learning communities or different like problem solving groups, action teams that can come together and share ideas, because no one person has the right idea for everything. And there's not always just one right idea, right? So the more minds that can come together, the more likely the group is to land on something that is highly effective. And I know the three of us do that in our work a lot, right? We bring ideas or prototypes of things to each other and get feedback, because we know what we know, but we need to get other people's input And so, you know, really prioritizing that collaboration among staff is so important, and creating that space and really communicating the value of that. And again, making that a safe space where it's not judgment, like if my students' math test scores are lower than both of yours, you're not like, hey, what are you doing wrong? But it's more like, how did you guys teach this? Like, what? And just learning from each other and creating that kind of environment is really what can help everybody feel safe, even the adults.
Can I add a non-joke there and just say, when you said that, something that came up for me a couple times as we've been discussing this is, I think just very gently calling out and calling to our awareness that educators are really hard on themselves. And to create the space for problems to be okay, problems need to be okay for you, right? Like not being able to get to a solution the first time you try, or you have to start over, or it just doesn't look how you imagined it. I think that just very gently, because we are also hard on ourselves, It just needs to be said, because I do think that that is part of a barrier that could get in the way, because that will be reflected to students in ways we do not realize if we are not okay with the messiness of getting to problems in our own spaces.
And I will say that that's exactly when you started there. I'm like, yep. And that has a domino effect, you know, how we perceive ourselves in the face of a problem, and the way in which that we lean into it or don't, or fear failure, is something that we in turn bring to our students. And, you know, it's a culture that either perpetuates with us or dies with us. And so on that note, I would say talk about problem solving all day, and certainly sit here with you and solve the world's problems. But unfortunately, we are out of time. So
can I share one takeaway real quick? My big takeaway from this episode is that I can stop reading most of the things I have to read at work, because there are at least 5 words I don't know on the first page. And so now I'm going to have so much more time. Eve, I think I can help you on that project I said no to.
That's a great practical application.
Okay, sorry, Kim.
Thank you. I can't wait. I'll send you all the files.
All right, listeners, thank you for joining us today. If you haven't already liked and subscribed to our page so that you know when the next episode is about to drop, make sure that you do that. And thank you for joining, and we'll be back soon.